Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This place is special.
Get asked all the time, where's your favorite place to take College Game Day? And I say every time, Eugene, Oregon.
Yeah.
This is the best crowd. Honestly, it's 6 in the morning here.
Yeah.
It's dark. Yeah. It's raining. They don't care.
No, they don't.
These fans right here, pound for pound, are as good as any college football fans in the country.
This program is staged to compete and to win championships.
Oregon is going to be in the championship game. Can you believe the magical season this has become?
When we watch this film, does our effort beat theirs?
Here's Bo Nix. Guns it! Touchdown, Oregon!
Been making deposits. Time to cash a check.
Sound at Austin, which is deafening for an Oregon 15-point win. Chip Kelly still does not have a win against his former school, and we say farewell.
Man, it feels great to be a Duck.
Welcome to the QB11 Show, presented by Scoop Duck. With Doug, Andrew, and J-Hop, here are the guys with the latest scoop.
Somebody tried to call me and I hung up on him. All right, I think, knock on wood, that all of our technical difficulties are behind us and we're all three here today. So, Hop, welcome in. QB, welcome in. Doug's here. We're all together. The gang is back together again for the first time since signing day. So welcome.
The three amigos.
Doug, how you doing? Justin, hope you guys had great weekends. I'm glad that we were able to all three hopefully connect and stay connected, like both literally and figuratively here on this pod. And we actually have a lot of good news to talk about because one of the most action-packed weekends from a recruiting standpoint since the first signing day.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know who had a good weekend, and that was everybody that showed up in Eugene this weekend. The weather was good. There was it seems like, and we'll get into it, the feedback was incredible. But let's actually start with the commitment, Gatlin Bear. Not really a shock. I think if people following Justin for a long time have seen this coming. QB talked about him on a recent episode as basically a commit. So no real surprise. We don't have to go and repeat and break down what he brings to the table. I think we've covered that pretty well over the last month or two. But, you know, maybe, Hop, just talk a little bit about what Oregon did to secure that commitment. And then, QB, if you want to add any thoughts there, go ahead, and then we'll move on to the next topic.
Yeah, I don't know that over the last, we'll just say last 4 to 5 weeks, there's been a better recruiter out there than Junior Adams. And that was highlighted once again, obviously, you know, on the early signing day, late December, he flipped Jeremiah McClellan, flipped Ryan Pelham from USC, you know, along the way, landed Evan Stewart out of the transfer portal, one of the most coveted transfers in the portal. And then now added Gatlin Bear. So, you know, how Oregon was able to do it. I, you know, of course, had Jim Harbaugh stayed at Michigan, you know, I kind of wonder how that would have played out if Oregon would have still been able to get him, if he would have ended up at Michigan. You know, obviously that was a big piece of the pie there, and I'm not going to pretend it wasn't. I do think that Oregon was diligent and did a really good job making sure to stay committed to recruiting him, even through everything. And ultimately, I think it was Oregon that did a really good job kind of pushing him into making a decision in January instead of December, just kind of based on some of that activity and some of the, you know, what was being said about Harbaugh and the NFL. So, I mean, more than anything, you know, this is another guy that Oregon prioritized very early in the cycle. It's not like they jumped on him in September or October. You know, they'd been recruiting him well into the, you know, early parts of the 2023 calendar year. So, more or less, that's how they did it. And, I guess that's how you do it. You just kind of keep chopping wood and good things happen, and Dan Lanning was able to do that.
QB, anything to add on Gatlin Bear?
No, not really. I just think that it just goes to show kind of the work that Junior Adams has been putting in, because I think it was primarily Junior Adams that got him to delay signing in the early signing period, which would have likely meant Michigan, and then just kind of kept chipping away. And ultimately now Oregon's in a position where after signing a very, very good 24 wide receiver class, they already have two top players in 25 committed with several other targets I'm sure we're going to talk about soon, possibly in a position to jump in the boat sooner than later. They now essentially have a high-level 2026 guy who's going to be a grown man coming off a mission trip where he's going to be in Dallas, hopefully training with some of the top trainers out there. So really, really nice pickup for the future. I'm sure Akili Smith Jr. Doesn't realize yet, but this is going to be a big pickup for him.
Yeah, that kind of puts a bow on the 2024 signing class, and this commitment moves Oregon up to number 3 in the composite rankings, which, I mean, hear that again. Oregon finished 3rd in the country in the composite rankings, 1st in the conference, ahead of Ohio State, ahead of LSU, ahead of Texas A&M, ahead of Florida, Florida State, Clemson, Miami. This is a whole nother level. I remember, you know, 2 years ago, we were talking about, gosh, if Oregon can consistently be in the top 10, 7, 8, 9, that's great. And now here we are, and Dan Lanning, in his second full year on the job, has landed the number 3 class in the country. And let's just talk about that, because that's, QB, I think you were saying top 5, and you undersold it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that now they're going to be moving Julian Sand over to the Ohio State class, which will probably push them back up against and ahead of Oregon for the 4 spot. So, or push Oregon to the 4 spot. But either way, like top 5, especially when you're looking at this class, there's such a cluster, basically from 2 to 6 or 7. To be in that group is where you need to be nationally competitive over the next couple of years. So I think Oregon did really, really impressive work in this cycle. And based off of early feedback from this weekend, it sounds like next cycle will match what's happening here.
Justin, yeah, any thoughts on the class finish?
Yeah, I just to finish off of what QB said there, it's going to be tough to top this class. It's not impossible, but it's going to be tough. So, you know, fans are clinging to a number 1 or a number 2 class, I guess, if you will. I'd say it's possible, but it's going to be tough. But what I said this elsewhere, but what I do love about this class most is of course there's star power, there's numbers, and it finishes in the top 5, which is fantastic. But it's not just fluff and being pumped up by one position group. You know, they were able to go out and sign guys at positions they needed to fill, and they filled it with really good football players. And the few that maybe aren't as highly ranked are, you know, guys that we've talked about before that, you know, have the projectables that are kind of looking for some of the things that can be developed. And that fits. And I think just the fact that they signed such a highly ranked class, and the fact that along the way they were able to fill all of the needs that they had, just really is impressive and sets this roster up, not just for next year, but for 2 years. And if they can continue doing this, this roster is just going to kind of keep churning like Alabama has and Georgia does currently as well.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible to think about. And, you know, I keep going back to you know, what it means to build a program and not a team. And I love the way that Josh Pate, you know, called that out differently, you know, over the last couple of months is, you know, and the way Dan and Marshall and company now entering year three, it feels like all cylinders, all, you know, we've talked about this a lot, right? All pistons are firing, everybody's on the same page, but also like, you've got you're hitting critical mass now, right? Because it, regardless of the portal, regardless of how well you do there, regardless if you're trying to fill holes, at the end of the day, you still got to get to year three to where you really see the benefits of those high school recruiting classes stack on stack on stack, really paying benefits on the field, right? Because even looking back to 2023, like very few 2023, you know, high school players in the Oregon's 2023 classes actually played significant minutes. In a few positions they did, but overall that was a great class, but most of them haven't played yet. 2022, Dan's first class, which is obviously a transitional class in the first place, a lot of those guys haven't really played yet either, right? So now we're entering year three. Not only are you stacking this third class, the 2024 class, on top of those two, now is also the time when those who are actually going to be taking a step forward, you're actually going to start seeing the benefits of those, the high school recruiting on the field of play, in addition to the transfer portal high-end players that have been coming in year after year. So as we pivot into the conversation on this past weekend, I think that it can't be lost on people that how much this delayed benefit of these high school classes really does. It does take time to see that play out. But yeah, let's talk about this past weekend. So we're in a dead period now for the rest of February and into early March, but it one more weekend before the dead period. There was a lot of elite players on campus in the 2025 class, a couple in the 2026 and beyond as well. And we don't have to talk about them all, Justin, but I thought maybe the way we would do this is you could kind of tee up one at a time, you know, guys that you particularly want to focus on, whether they're ones that might be early commit targets for Oregon or just high-profile guys that we want to talk about. And then as you tee it up, and then QB, you can jump in and give your thoughts on that player as well, and then we'll just go back to the next one. So, sound good? Justin, why don't you start us off with the first one?
Yeah, I think the easiest first one, obviously, we'll start with the 2025 class just to kind of work chronologically there. But, you know, I think the biggest talk here right now has been the tight ends. And, of course, they were able to have Nate Roberts and Desaun Brame on campus this weekend. And, you know, I've talked about them before, and I do believe that Oregon sits in a really good position for both. But I suppose for the sake of just kind of talking about it, I think Oregon is the definitive team to beat for Desaun Brame. And I do believe that he's probably a guy that's poised to make an earlier or a sooner decision. And I hate putting timelines on it because if you don't hit it, everybody's in an uproar over it. But I do think that he's a guy, you know, from this weekend specifically that's got potential, you know, to commit in this month of February, maybe within the next week or two. And I think that's a really huge get for Oregon at a massive position of need. So teeing things off, I've got Nate Roberts and I've got Desaun Brame. Those are a couple guys. I don't know what QB thinks about them, but those are the first two I figured I'd tee up.
Yeah, I mean, I love both those guys. And if those ended up being the two tight ends that Oregon took in this class, I'd be like over the moon ecstatic, because when you look at the roster turnover that's scheduled to happen after this year, both Terrence Ferguson and Patrick Herbert will be running out of eligibility and moving on to their next station in life, whether that be the NFL or whatever direction those guys decide to go. And Oregon's going to be in a position where they need to reload that room. And so the fact that not only is it, it's a great national tight end class, but the fact that Oregon's in a position of strength with two of probably their top three targets nationally this early in the cycle says a lot about the work that Drew Maringer has done, because I don't know that he's been the best recruiter on the staff over the last few years, but it seems that this year things are really turning up and he's able to lock in on some higher end targets.
And those are guys that they need for sure. I didn't know if you had any thoughts, Doug, but I can move on if you want or
yeah, go ahead. Go to the next group or next guy.
Next group, I think for me, and I know that, you know, QB would love to talk about him. We know that Dan Lanning's going to do this, and I'll highlight it. There was three defensive linemen in the 2025 class on campus, all, you know, a little bit different kind of players. But the reason I want to highlight them is because it is a really, really, really weak class of defensive linemen out west in particular this year. I know it's never abundantly great, but it's really bare this year. And the reason I highlight it is because, you know, arguably the best one out west this year from a defensive lineman standpoint is Matt Johnson out of De La Salle. and he was at Oregon. I know that a couple of the 24/7 sports guys crystal-balled him to Oregon. I could totally see that. If there's a position Dan's going to own out west, it's probably going to be defensive line. And, you know, I think Oregon put themselves in a great spot there. But I highlight him because along with him, Gus Cordova out of Lake Travis, Texas, was also on campus. And then Trajan Odom out of North Carolina via California was also on campus. And the reason I mentioned that is I do think Oregon's going to have to do quite a bit of work nationally this year in terms of recruiting defensive linemen. And we know it's really hard to get some of those elite five-star guys. So I think this is where you see Dan Lanning and his crew really look for some developmental project guys. Not that Cordova or Odom fit that bill. But I mean, those are a couple of guys they've identified early on that they're going to target nationally at that position, which I think they'll need to. So those are the three guys I tee up next. I don't know what your thoughts are on them. QB, just real quick, Trajan Odom I talked to. I just posted the article. Go read it because he gave me so much good stuff to write about from the trip that I would definitely be keeping tabs on him moving forward for sure.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you teed that up for me because I know this is a guy that I saw he was on the visitor list, and I'm not nearly as up to date as you are on all these 2025 names, but I made time to watch all of the guys that visited this last weekend, and Odom stuck out like a sore thumb in like the best possible way, like just big. He's what you expect a defensive lineman from North Carolina or South Carolina to look like, and it's exactly, he fits the profile of what we want. And is he a like a surefire like five-star player right now? Absolutely not. But he has just great, like, is his frame projection and his athletic talent is so good that, like, when you think about the classes that Oregon signed over the last few years, like, you want to backfill those guys with high upside prospects. Odom's a guy that just oozes physical talent. It's just a matter of putting it all together for him. And I'm not even saying that to say that he has a long ways to go, because I actually think he's substantially better than his rating currently would indicate. And that's always the case, right? Like, these early rankings are super kind of all over the place. They haven't had a chance to evaluate all these guys in person. We don't, the rating sites don't have like a real good pulse on who's being recruited by who. And this stuff all shakes out over the course of the year. But when I watch Trajan Odom, I'm like, this guy for me would be like a no brainer 4-star player, just because he's got great length. His proportions are good. He's got a nice thick lower half. He's able, like, he's got good get off, change of direction. He's a guy that to me projects in the Brandon Dorlus kind of mold in terms of what position he'd play. Like, going to be probably a 300-pound, 6'4 and a half, 6'5 guy with long arms, big lower half that can sit and anchor, and then possibly, hopefully, develop some pass rush. So that guy is one that I like would really like to see end up in this class. I don't know what the rest of the defensive line board looks like at this stage, but early on, just with the guys I've watched, he's by far my favorite. Grant Cordova, I'm not as sure on him. I don't know. He doesn't strike me as a guy that we would be in a huge rush to take right now, especially because, like, you have a very similar player, but in my opinion, a slightly higher caliber player in Matt Johnson on campus this weekend from De La Salle. And that's also Tosh Lapoy's, like, old stomping grounds. That's an area where he's extremely effective recruiting in the Bay. And if that's a guy that Oregon likes, which it seems, and it seems like he's a kid that likes Oregon, then to me that's a no-brainer to pick him up because he's got good length. I don't know if he ends up playing outside or inside. I think it really just depends how his body grows. But he plays with really good lean. He's got long arms. I think, like, worst-case scenario with him, you're going to get a really strong edge defender against the run, and then we'll see what kind of pass rush develops there.
Justin, I want to correct you on something you said a minute ago. You said if there's an area that Dan Lanning and company might own out west, it's the defensive line, and I would say they already do, as we've seen in the last two classes. Just teasing a little bit there. But I think it's a good call out, though, to harken back to those last two classes, because if it is such a weak defensive line class out west, which I'm sure it is based on what you're telling me and what others are saying, the fact that Oregon basically took everybody of value in the Western footprint, and not everyone, right, but all of the elite players, all the best players along the defensive line and edge in the Western footprint, not just in the 2024 class, but also the 2023 class, that just puts them even further ahead of the pack in USC and others, right? So a good call out there. Justin, what about some of the – I know we've had the Oregon had some elite defensive backs on campus this weekend as well. Is there any of those you want to highlight?
Yeah, you know, at the moment, I think it goes without saying, DJ Pickett, five-star safety, the best player at his position. Obviously, truly elite. This was not his first visit to Oregon. It was, as I recall, at least his second and possibly his third. And so, you know, what's important to note there is I've talked about already, this isn't a guy, DJ Pickett, that's going to make a decision today or tomorrow or March or April. This is a recruitment that even if he did make a commitment before August, you know, likely goes into November, December based on just kind of his interest. He'll take other visits, I'm sure, even if he did make a commitment somewhere. And so this is a guy you're just really kind of chipping away at early on. And to get him on campus this weekend, I think it says a lot. You know, obviously Oregon did a really good job trying to get a fairly specific number of guys on campus. They didn't want too few or too many. You know, they wanted the right guys on campus that they could really take their time and talk to them and spend time with them and make it count. But additionally, on the flip side, you're talking about essentially to this point, one of the most important recruiting weekends of the year. Anybody who chose to come to Oregon, I believe, is expressing pretty sincere interest in the program. So, you know, as far as that goes, I know that there was others, Kobe Sellers, Mari Pickett, a couple other guys, you know, that did visit Oregon. I'm not certain that they are in the take category at the moment, but there is absolutely no doubt that DJ Pickett is. And, you know, the really cool part is that basically is two, you know, five-star level safeties in back-to-back weekends that visited Oregon. DJ Pickett this weekend, Fahim Delane last weekend out of Maryland. So, I mean, you got to love what Coach Hampton's doing there. That's the guy I would probably talk about most there at the secondary position. And to boot, with how well Oregon's recruited the secondary position the last couple cycles, this doesn't really need to be a class at that position group based on quantity. It needs to be quality. So, you know, obviously you're going to go after guys that are, you know, in that top 50 range, like Pickett.
Yeah, and Jaden Hudson was on campus, right?
I don't believe he wasn't on the list, and I don't believe so.
Okay. So, like, when I look at safety position for this recruiting cycle, like, Jaden Hudson to me is a must-get player.
Absolutely.
And then you're just looking for another elite player nationally to pair with him. And so, like, Fahim Delane got crystal balled by Wilt Fong today to Ohio State. DJ Pickett, obviously, he's from Florida. It's going to be an uphill battle. But I think, like, that's the type of player, assuming that you can secure a commitment from Jaden Hudson, who's another Bay Area, Pittsburgh high guy, that I think that you just prioritize and you keep chopping at for the long haul this cycle, and you make a significant investment because he's just a truly unique talent at the position. Like, there's just not a lot of guys in this class. I don't know if there's any guys in this class quite like him. So when I look at the defensive back room, I agree he's the headliner by far.
And just to follow up, I did speak with Jaden Hudson about, well, we communicated. It was about a week ago, maybe about 9 days ago. And I did say, hey, you visiting Oregon soon? And his response was, I don't know when I'll be back on a visit, but I am coming soon. So if he wasn't on the list that I was provided this weekend, but it looks like he'll be back at some point. I agree with you. That's a must-get kind of guy because you got to keep those those guys out here.
That's the best West Coast safety, right? And so you got to lock that guy down. And then it's really about let's find the best that we can get. I don't really care where he's from nationally to pair. And if that can be Delane or if that can be Pickett, that would be the best case scenario, obviously, to go. So,
well, if that kid's the best safety in the West and Oregon wants him, I have ultimate confidence in Dan and Tosh and Hampton's ability to lock him down. So we'll see how that plays out over the cycle. And obviously the spring visit window is kind of the next big one during spring practices and leading up to the spring game. And I'm sure we'll see a lot of these guys back that were here in the winter and a lot of new ones here as well over the course of spring ball. Any other positions or players you want to highlight, Justin?
Yeah, I think there's two for me that I will highlight once again, and we'll just call them the modern day duo. And that's, you know, running back Jordan Davison and linebacker / edge Nasir Wyatt. And kind of what we've talked about already, obviously, you know, Oregon loves to recruit modern day, as does anyone, but that's kind of the pipeline. Running back Jordan Davison is a real key in this class. I know that, you know, they weren't able to pull Nate Frazier from there last year as he ultimately signed with Georgia. I know Oregon's hoping to not make that mistake twice. Not that it was a mistake. And I did speak with Davidson, and he did say that he plans on cutting his list soon. Didn't have a date, but did promise me that Oregon would be on that list just because of what Oregon has done so far. So I think that's a good one to highlight. That's an elite, you know, running back out west that you really want to keep. And then Nasir Wyatt, you know, obviously, again, another defensive prospect, but kind of a tweener between that linebacker and edge role. And, you know, USC is making a big push there. I think it would continue to be a statement, you know, if Oregon was able to, you know, beat out USC for Nasir Wyatt. I do like where the Ducks stand with him today, but that kind of seems like the battle right now. And once again, you were able to get him on your campus in Eugene and not, you know, USC's campus this weekend.
Yeah, I think getting those guys on campus, I would assume via Air Wrestler, is a big, big, big deal for Oregon. Wyatt strikes me as a guy who's pretty much an Oregon lock at this point. I could be wrong. And then Davison's a guy that to me is a must get, because running back in this cycle is going to be really important. And I think there's some other good options in California nationally, but I think being able to secure the top back out west would go a long way into bolstering that room for the foreseeable future. I think about the possibility of pairing like a player like Davidson with a guy like D'Air Hill, Dax? What's Dax? What, out of Southern California? Hop, save me! I'm drowning.
I don't remember. Yeah.
Okay, you're good. And then I don't know if we were going to go here next, Justin, but I think the receiver position is another one that's important to highlight from this weekend. Not necessarily because there was like a big group of guys, but you had your top commitment in Dallas Wilson, who, in my opinion, is like the most important current commit other than Achilles Smith Jr. to hold on to. Just given like his talent profile is just insane. Just one of, like, I would say he's right up there with Troy Franklin as the most talented Oregon receiver commitment of all time. So being able to secure that, hold on to that through signing day will be huge. And then also you hosted Isaiah Mazi, and as the Oregon receiver room fills up, I would assume it seems that Oregon's putting themselves in a position to take four this year. You had Isaiah Mazi and Dak, Carrion Moore, from who's the number one receiver in the country from Duncanville, Texas, on campus. I think that Oregon would love to probably take both of those guys if they could, two super high-end prospects on campus.
Yeah, yeah. If you can flip Moore from LSU, which is no easy feat, lock down Mosey, and then hold on to Adrian and Dallas Wilson, no relation, then yeah, that's pretty much a good class, and you lock that down and you call it good, right? I think we'd take that class.
Yeah, yeah, that's not even mentioning a guy like Cooper Perry from my neck of the woods, who I think is like an awesome player that I know is really high on Oregon.
Yeah, all of that paired with what they were able to just kind of do here late in the cycle with J-Mac, you know, obviously Dylan Gresham, somebody that I think we're all pretty high on, we'd like to see him, and then Ryan Pelham, you know, Evan Stewart will come, and whether he's a year or two, you've got those guys, and then you bring in, like you said, the likes of DeCarrion Moore and Isaiah Mosey and the Wilson duo. You start stacking those receiver classes at the prep level, basically, and it becomes a kind of sustained for the next
if Oregon is able to even just hold on to the Wilsons and then add like two of the three of Perry, Mazi, and like Marcus Harris or DeCarrion Moore, I don't think Oregon's going to be going to the portal anytime soon for receivers.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't even mention Jurion Dickey either.
Jurion Dickey. And then you also have Gatlin Bear coming in the following year in 2026 fresh off of a mission. Just a casual 10-1 500-meter guy. So Junior Adams has, like, it was kind of funny. Like, the swing, there was a lot of people, like, kind of critical of Junior Adams when they processed out Jordan Anderson. And it was like Dylan Gresham was visiting other places. And, it, like, no one really was – I don't think anyone outside of you, Justin, was all that confident that we'd flip McClellan. And all of a sudden, it's like, not only did we flip McClellan, we flipped Pelham. You signed Bear late. And then you like turn the page, you hold on to Gresham, and then you turn the page, and oh yeah, you have a top three receiver in next year's class already committed, and then another top seven receiver in next year's class committed, and you're in a position where the number one receiver in next year's class, and then like a whole gaggle of like 0.95 or greater than four-star receivers are like lined up visiting and like really high on Oregon. Junior Adams is absolutely cooking right now. And he deserves everyone's respect.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if we had to pick one coach that we felt was due a raise right now today, it might be Junior Adams with what his assault has been here in the last 6 weeks or so. But yeah, you're right. It was kind of looking kind of poo-poo-y and down and out. And here we are just 6 weeks later, and it's like,
oh, and he signed Evan Stewart.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's add Evan Stewart out of the portal, too. I think he earned his Christmas bonus this year if he got one, or he should have.
Yeah, I would.
That's a nice work in December.
I would not argue at all against Junior Adams being a seven-figure assistant. I think he more than justifies that in a co-OC title.
Well, and it's not just the recruiting, right? I mean, you're seeing the development of that room on the field too, right? Like you've seen the steps that Troy took over the last couple of years, and look up north, right? I mean, the guys that he brought in and coached for two or three seasons, look pretty good up there too, right? So he's earned his keep, and I agree with you.
2,000-yard receivers this year, two guys with 10-plus touchdowns. Junior Adams knows what he's doing, and I am very glad that he's our wide receiver coach.
Anyone else we want to highlight on from the weekend, or either maybe guys to look? I don't want to give away your all your trade secrets there behind the paywall, QB, but I guess we can just tell people that you've posted a next five to commit for both the offense and the defense here over the last week, and so I would tell everyone, if you're not on Scoop Deck, go pay the $9 a month and get over there and check out those lists, because there's some really exciting names on those.
Yeah, I understand that it's kind of this low period, right? There's absolutely zero football being played. And, you know, some folks, aren't maybe totally into recruiting in the ways that others are. But, you know, I would urge that, and I know I say this, I think Oregon fans specifically need to continue to learn that the spring is going to be the critical period in recruiting. And it needs to be, and you need to pay attention, because the bulk of the class, or the bulk of the groundwork for the rest of the class, will all be done by July, and probably at least 2/3 of that will be done by the end of April, into May. So, we'll be back hopping and rolling with football in a month for spring ball, and recruiting will be hot and heavy. So yes, stay tuned. And I do think this is shaping up to be a ridiculous class for Oregon. And the best part, I guess I'll throw this out real quick, just because we highlighted the 25s, and it's even harder to track the 26s and 27s. But along this weekend, Oregon hosted the number one quarterback in 2026, Jared Curtis, and the number one tight end in the 2026 class in Brock Harris on campus as well this weekend. So, it's hard to get too excited. I get it, but it's like, man, that's really something. And then they hosted two more modern day prospects that are in the 2026 class, the Tomuhini Topui, which is one of the top early defensive linemen in 26 nationally, and then edge player Sean Scott as well was at Oregon. So just an incredible weekend. Just incredible.
2026 offensive tackle, is it Cody Green? Am I getting that right? Was also on campus?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Another big need there at the OT position.
Another guy that is worth every penny, Marshall Malco, is very good at his job, if that hasn't been established yet. The staff is just the turned down Bama pitch by Dan right now, I'm sure it's hitting like crack in the 80s. Like, it is just they could not have handled that entire situation better. And I think that's it's giving them nitrous on the recruiting cycle or trail.
And I know all the people, oh, he wasn't offered, he didn't turn him in. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. What matters is the way that Oregon was able to take whatever it was and pivot it and spin it and turn it into this recruiting and marketing machine that it's what they're so good at and what they've gotten so much better at, quite frankly, over the last 2 years. Because quite honestly, I think Oregon was really, really not utilizing all of their brand and marketing powers at their disposal for quite some time, and you've seen it now fully operationalized, and I do think a lot of that is Marshall and his staff.
Well, it's preparation and it's execution, right? These guys are really organized, and I think that, you know, they built out the recruiting department in a way that you've got guys like Tyler Dean and Pat Biondo, who in years past we would be, you know, talking about a lot more frequently because of their roles in recruiting, and they do a tremendous job with what they do, but because they do that well, it allows Marshall to kind of look more big picture and take a step back and say, okay, here's what we need 2 years from now. Here's who we need to get on campus in 2 months and start building, that you start doing those big picture things that are just, you know, so superb. That's really, I think, kind of what we're seeing here is just the organization and the preparation, and then of course the execution. And like QB said, every recruit that I talk to mentions the stability in Oregon. The stability in Oregon. He wants to be there. The stability, like he's right. It's like crack in the 80s. It's every single kid is talking about it every single time I interview him.
Recruiting is sales. So one other quick topic to shift gears to now here. I put out a solo episode late last week, I think Friday morning, kind of talking about the Tennessee versus the NCAA lawsuits and whatnot going on there in Tennessee. And I think the Attorney General of Virginia also joined on board that. And there could be a temporary restraining order coming out of that as early as tomorrow. But, of course, then as soon as I put that episode out, then, you know, we kind of get this big bomb dropped on Friday where the SEC and the Big Ten have come together. We're not going to call it an alliance, but they are partnering together to really look at the future of college football and how the sport is organized, how the sport should be structured, and how they can, like, get out from under this constant barrage of lawsuits, work with the players. It's going to involve revenue sharing. It's going to involve paying athletes directly. They haven't said all this, right? But it will, because it has to. It's the only way you're going to get out from under the lawsuits. And so I'm really excited about, I don't know how much either one of you know or have looked at any of this stuff, but I'm really excited about the prospect here, because I think the signal coming out of there, this isn't new. They've been working on this behind the scenes for a while, right? They're just announcing it now. But I think it became clear over the last few months that they were letting the NCAA and new NCAA director Charlie Baker try to find a path forward, and quite frankly that those efforts are failing miserably, right? Because he's not getting anywhere in Congress, because that body is dysfunctional, and also he didn't partner with the SEC, with the Big Ten, with the member schools that matter the most on trying to come up with a plan that actually works. You know, it was more of the NCAA trying to hold back the future and trying to create space to still preserve the past, and it's not going to happen. The genie's left the bottle, but I'll quit rambling here. But I'd love to hear either of your thoughts on, obviously we don't know what's going to come out of it, but I'm just excited about the fact that the two conferences that matter, you know, that drive all the revenue and all the exposure and all the matterness in this sport are working together to try to figure out what should the future look like so we can chart that path. Justin, why don't I go to or QB, why don't you go first on this one?
I'm not the person to ask, Doug. This is your forte.
Justin, you had any thoughts on it?
You know, I was thinking because, yeah, Doug's like, I'll stop and let you guys talk. I'm like, no, you keep going, because I want to learn what you're, because, yeah, you're the guy on this. But no, I guess my simple thoughts, and Doug, you totally correct me if I'm wrong, beginning of the end for the NCAA, right? You're about to remove all or most of their power, I think, moving forward, and probably build at some point an entity that makes most of the major decisions in college football. I continue to think that we've done some good changes in college football over the last few years, but we've also done some very dangerous decisions that have not been well thought. And I do think the guys that are actually involved in this day in and day out, the athletic directors and the presidents and conference, you know, leaders, will have a little better pulse on this than the NCAA has. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You tell me if I'm wrong, Doug, because I'd like to know.
No, I mean, I think that's definitely one potential outcome of this, right? I mean, and Sankey, and who was quick to go on record last week saying, like, their goal is not to leave the NCAA. They don't want to do that. But it's still one possible outcome, right? It just depends on what can be charted. I think if they don't leave the NCAA, then they stay in it for their other sports, and football becomes kind of at least major football in the sense of the Power Two conferences and maybe a handful of others become kind of a carve out that has they're completely self-governing, right? Like, we're not trying to pretend that a football player at Alabama and a field hockey player at Dartmouth, you know, are at all the same thing, right? And that should have the same set of rules, right? So they would actually carve it out and create it, you know. So that's one possibility. I think there's a lot of ways it could end up looking. But I think the fact that they're actually trying to figure out that course and work together with the two entities that matter driving the bus. And there was a real key quote in one of the articles, and Ross Dellinger covers this really well. The Athletic covers it. Dennis Dodd, you know, a lot of the national guys cover this really well. But there was a really good quote where I think it was from Sankey, and they were at the, like, winter meetings or whatever, and you know, an AD or a president or athletic or somebody at one of the other conferences, one of the other schools, and I kind of turned to him and said, when are you, meaning the Big Ten and the SEC, going to tell us what you want this to look like? Like, they're all looking to those two conferences to take the lead and define this, because of course they are. They're the only two conferences that can. And kind of dovetailing on this, there's two other things that are happening, all this stuff is happening at the same time, but it's all interrelated, right? So at the same time, you have news that came out, and the College Football Playoff Committee is meeting, oversight group is meeting today and tomorrow as well. And one of the things that was left on the table in their last meeting a month ago was the move from the playoff format from a six automatic qualifiers to and six at-large. Their goal was to move to 5 and 7, and a month ago, Kirk Schultz from Washington State, who holds the Pac-12 or Pac-2 vote, if you will, you know, requested a delay in that vote. And then now, you know, and potentially they're going to vote on it again tomorrow. It has to be unanimous. And the word came out that Schultz is basically trying to say, we will vote to move to 5-7, but you have to guarantee us inclusion and revenue in 2026 and beyond. Because once again, no playoff format of any kind or any revenue distribution of any kind exists beyond 2025. If nothing gets agreed to, it just stops. It just stops after two more years. So he's trying to carve out financial and access guarantees for the Pac-2 schools, you know, in order for his vote, which I think is a really dangerous and short-sighted game, because what you heard Sankey then say this week also is, in regards to the playoff format, is, you know, there's a way it should look, and it, as long as we can get to that part, you know, so it looks the way it needs to look to be workable for us, then we'll sign on for a longer agreement. But what he left unsaid, but what was very clear, was the Big Ten and the SEC can easily take their ball and go home after two more years, and they can just do their own playoff. They can have an SEC playoff and a Big Ten playoff, and the two conferences can meet and declare, you know, and maybe they wouldn't call it a national champion, so they would avoid antitrust, or maybe they'd have a path for others. But, like, they hold all the cards after 2 years, and Sankey's made that very clear, that they will exercise that power if they don't get what they want now. So it's a dangerous game that Schultz is playing, and not only is it going to hurt Washington State and Oregon State if it backfires on them, it's also, by extension, going to hurt the other group of five conferences and potentially even the ACC and the Big 12 if they all get cut out of what a future playoff might look like because Washington State's holding up the boat. It's a pretty entertaining and interesting thing to watch for me.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that Oregon State and Washington State are in a position of zero leverage where they're getting in the way and drawing attention to themselves in a way that's not going to benefit them at all. Like, this is the one thing I do have an opinion on. Like, ultimately, all this does is hurt Oregon State's chances of being a part of anything that's coming up. Whereas if they would have just played ball, they might have had an opportunity.
Yeah, they have this really short-term leverage for 2 years, right? Because the Big Ten and the SEC don't want to see two group of five, you know, conference winners in the playoffs, and quite frankly, neither does the public at large. And the other group of five conferences have kind of acknowledged that, right? Like, you've heard the AAC, Oresco has come out and said that, yeah, it doesn't make sense. You know, 5-7 makes sense, but for some reason, Oregon State and Washington State think that if they can hold this up for 2 years, that's their leverage in order to get something beyond that. And quite frankly, I don't see a scenario where the Big Ten and the SEC and others would say, like, okay, so we can get to 5-7 2 years sooner, we're going to guarantee you, you know, tens of thousands or tens of millions or hundreds of millions of dollars over the next 10 years. Like, it's insane. They'll just say, okay, you want to play hardball?
Yeah, and now we're going to...
In 2 years, you are out, baby. Yeah. You are out.
In 2 years, you can have fun in the Mountain West, like, ultimately is what's going to end up happening. So...
Yeah, so there's a lot going on in that sphere, so, you know, follow along. Again, Ross Dellinger is probably the best person that covers this in the most depth. I love watching that, but certainly I talk about it. We talk about it on online quite a bit as well. So follow me on Twitter for that. Anything else for either of you before we call the show?
Nah, I'm good.
I think so. Yeah, that's a good little pod.
Look at us, a successful show where all three of us were present on time, didn't have any connection or technical difficulties. This is great stuff.
We're starting to figure it out. All right, so get over to scoopduck.com. We're back, baby. Yeah, get over to scoopduck.com, check out Justin and his team and all his content over there. Follow me at DouglasTS on Twitter, at QB11SD on Twitter for Mr. Andrew, and, of course, the show, at QB11Show on Twitter. I've been doing a lot of polls. We've been posting some polls up there every couple days, so you can get over there and check out, engage with that content. I need poll ideas, so
wait,
send me a message.
Doug, I need to ask something. Why the hell is Penn State not on the best Big Ten uniforms poll?
You know the answer to that question, QB.
You didn't consult with me before you
generic white and generic white and blue that looks like a middle school uniform is never going to be on anybody's best uniform list.
The Penn State uniform
is blue and white.
It doesn't even have a logo. It doesn't have nothing. It could be me, you know, ordering uniforms from like $49.99 special on Trader Joe's or whatever.
You sound like a hater, but whatever. We move.
Hey, when I make the polls, I get to decide who's on it.
Yeah.
But Michigan won convincingly on that one. But, yeah, so follow all that. And, yeah, we'll be back pretty soon with a new episode, definitely next Monday with the three of us. And if there's something that breaks between now and then, we'll probably do a carve-out. Thanks, everyone.